This is Jeff Chrisman, and I'm on the Living Arts of Tulsa podcast, and this afternoon, I'm very happy to be visiting with artist Diane Salamone. Diane, thanks so much for taking the time to visit with me today.
Well, thank you for selecting me for an interview. I appreciate it.
Certainly, and I really enjoyed. I know that we got to talk a little bit at the artist panel. I believe that was back in February, before it seems like the whole world changed. So,
yes.
And I know that was kind of there were several people there, and we got to visit just very briefly, but I'm very glad to in some way to continue the conversation. So what I thought I would do just to get things started is, for the benefit of listeners and viewers who might not be familiar with you, if you'd like just to share a little bit about your artistic perspective and just a little bit about your work.
Okay, my artistic perspective is, we have to create, those of us who are artists, there's just something inside of us. It is indescribable. It is just something I feel like I have to do. I feel as if I'm not fulfilled as a human being unless I'm creating. For me, it is a lot about expression, about how do we handle the tragedies that we have in our life, because we all have those. So I never really want to paint what may be bothering me at the moment or what's terrible in the world, because we all know about that. We have that right in front of us. So how do we come to a better balance in our life? And I do that through my art. And I do that, I usually start with a underpainting of all kinds of colors, because color is my thing. I am not a black and white person, as you can see looking around.
Oh, yeah.
My paintings behind. I mean, everything's got a lot of color. Red is one of my favorite colors, and I don't care what I try to do, it ends up as you see, I'm wearing red. Can you believe that? I like red. There's something that's so dynamic about it. It can be fiery and it's sort of a neat protest color, but it's also a lovely, beautiful color that's rich and has lots of tradition with it. So there's a lot of things about red that I love. After I do my underpainting, I will put in some sort of writing. If I'm worried about something, I'll write that on the canvas. If I am wanting to pray for something, I will write that on the canvas. And then from there, I'm also big into music. So I will put in musical lines. I love to play the piano. And so I will definitely get some motion in there that's like music playing. And then from there, I let my painting rest for a little bit, because it usually needs to dry for at least 24 hours, because I usually have a lot of stuff on there. And then I go in and I start trying to bring some sensibility to the painting. Where can we make it feel beautiful and refined, and as if we're going on a wonderful journey that's taking us to a much better place in our world? And that's really what my painting's about. So,
I appreciate it. And what's coming up in the moment, I was going to ask you, and this is something that I've never thought to ask an artist before. In other words, once you basically let the painting rest, or, you know, letting things dry, does it sometimes feel a little, I guess what I would almost ask is, when you first started creating art, is it a little bit daunting to kind of come back and revisit the work or do you already really have an idea or a sense of what you want to do to continue it? Or is it possibly, or do both things happen?
Both things happen, and really there's nothing more frightening than to see a blank canvas. So I have to tell myself, it's just a piece of canvas, and this is not going to make or break the world, and it's not going to make or ruin your career. This is about the process of what do you want to put onto this canvas. And so that makes me always feel more comfortable. And then I always tell myself, nothing is written in stone. You know, if I make a mistake and I don't like where it's going, I can change it. There are many ways to change it. And one of the problems I get into is, often I will fall in love with one part in that canvas, and I just don't want to let it go. But honestly, it sometimes has to go, because it doesn't do anything to fulfill the whole painting. So then I have to go in and say, okay, just take it out. You may love it, but it's not good for this particular piece.
That's so interesting. In fact, I never even considered that or thought about that, not being an artist myself, but I can totally identify with, you know, just a small part of, or just a segment of something that I am trying to complete. And I never thought about that before, about the, feeling so attached or feeling so strongly about a certain part of it. But as you say, you know, trying to let that go for the good of for the whole work.
Well, painting is really the process of addition and elimination. And, you know, some people really work on the elimination side. Some people work more on the addition side. I work more in the middle, kind of on a balanced. I like things to be balanced, where there's a feeling of going in and you're taking the journey and you want to go back and look at it one more time because you feel like maybe you missed something along the way. So I do have a lot that goes on in my paintings. The painting behind me, I'll just tell you a story about this one because it's kind of a cute
painting. Oh, yeah, thank you.
That one I call Mozart Plays Football. And I am always a good sport, and I sit down and I'll watch football with my husband for a little while. And so I watched, well, this was a few years ago, so I was watching football with him. I thought, okay, I've done enough. He's okay into the game. So I decided to go in and I started to play the piano. So I was playing Mozart. And then I, you know, finished doing that. And I thought, well, I think I'll go paint for a while. So I came in here. And the next thing you know, I have three footballs going across that painting. And I thought, this is hilarious. It was almost like it painted itself. So it was Mozart Plays Football. And it's a large piece, but I've always got, you know, that's how my brain works. Because, you know, a lot of people are worried about, oh, well, the activity of life keep you from painting. Never. It is always adding more information for me to do something with. So that's what the exciting thing is about, you know, people in your life, events in your life, all of those spur me on to paint.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And I was going to ask as well, do you, looking back, do you find, are there some days where you feel more moved or maybe more more inspired than others? And just, you know, just from the standpoint of being a human being, are there some days where maybe you just have to give yourself a chance to get started or to dive into the work? Or do you find it's one more than the other? Just in terms of how you feel?
I find that if you wait for the mood to paint, you would probably never really paint. There are certain things that inspire me. It really is like a practice. Like, you have to go into the studio. This is what you do. I find that when I don't go into the studio, I feel like something is lacking. So it's just a part of my life. So I'll go into the studio. And another thing that's interesting is once you start a painting, and I usually have a few going at the same time, but then I focus totally on one. That painting doesn't leave my mind until it is complete. Whether I'm in the studio painting or whether I'm doing something else, that painting is still being painted. Because I'll come in, I'm working on one now, it's behind me on the table, but I'm working on one now that painting has been in my head. It's been kind of sitting, resting for about 3 days, but the whole time I was determining, where do I really want to take it? Where does it need to go to make this a complete visual experience for me painting and for the viewer who will then see it? You know, I don't like to have something that doesn't feel like intriguing or happy for the viewer to come in and look at, because part of painting is the viewer. So if you're painting to show, you have to keep that viewer in mind. Painting to sell is a whole different story. Again, I paint and I'm happy when I show, and I'm also happy when I sell. So I'm really about the process. I learned that a long time ago. If you're looking for fame and fortune and all that, boy, that's fleeting. And if you read the stories of artists, most of them really lived pretty unhappy lives in many ways because they were looking for that fame and fortune right then and there. And that's not what this is about. This is about what's inside of you that needs to come out. It's my form of expression.
Yeah, and I was wondering too, in fact, that's interesting to hear that as far as, you know, painting to sell versus, you know, the self-expression of what's happening, you know, in the moment. And I'm assuming too that, I would assume if someone is wanting to do that, just trying to anticipate what people want, I didn't know if that really even almost makes it even more difficult to try to paint to sell, so to speak, you know, trying to guess or hope, you know, what people are looking for.
We can never know, and it's interesting because a lot of times I will finish a painting and I'll think, oh, it's not one of my favorites. That painting will sell, you know? So there's no telling what someone is looking for, because painting is an emotional experience. You know, most people who are if you're an art collector, you're about how that painting impacts you. It's very different than if you're looking for something that's going to match in your room. And you don't really want it to, you know, be something that competes with anything else that you really like in your room. That's a whole different story. My paintings, and I realize this, demand to be looked at. just because of the compositions and the colors. And I know that, but I like that. I mean, there's a demand about them. Come look at me. And I, that's kind of what I have always done. Not at first on purpose. That just came out. So, and I don't know where that came from, but something I've always known, because I've had people tell me your painting dominates the whole room. You know, you walk in a room, you're going to see that painting.
Oh yeah. And it's very evident just looking at your work behind you. I mean, it really does. And yet at the same time though, you blend in with that and the rest of the room, but at the same time though, it definitely does get your attention.
Right.
Yeah. And then I was going to ask as well, just kind of shifting gears a little bit, just to hear about how you got started, just in terms of, you know, what your early inspirations were, you know, what inspired you to start creating art, and just to maybe hear a little bit about your journey and how your work has evolved over time.
Well, I started painting. I had always wanted to study art and also music. I was dual. I loved both of them. But my family situation did not allow me to have that privilege of going to college to study art and music. So I worked full time as a secretary, and the company I worked for put me through college, and it had to be a business degree. So my degree is in finance. And I graduated with a 3.8, which is kind of funny because it wasn't really what I wanted to do, but if I kept my grades up, they would pay for my college. And so they did. That was back in the old days when they would do stuff like that. But I really wanted to paint. And when I was about 30, I was diagnosed with an eye disease called keratoconus. And at that time, that was pretty much, you were marching down to blindness. And I had to really think about what did I want to really do in my life. And so I had two little kids, and I read in the Wall Street Journal that they were finding that people who would draw had better perspective and increased their capability of vision because they learned to look at things differently. So I took a drawing class over at Tulsa Junior College on the weekends, and my husband would watch the children. And then I was with a teacher named Cynthia Potter, and Cynthia said, "You really ought to paint." So I thought, she's right. So I took some watercolor classes with Sabina Bernard, and Sabina taught me how to do watercolor. She was a wonderful teacher. And then from there, I took some classes at Philbrook, and golly, what was her name? There was an instructor, I have to think about it. She encouraged me to enter Watercolor USA, and I did. And that was a big show. I had no idea what it was. And so I remember thinking, oh, I've got to go have slides made. So I had the slides made, and that cost a lot of money. And we had four little kids, and you know, it was just... So then I thought, oh my gosh, the entry fee is $10. $10. So then I got in, and I thought, oh my gosh, what do I do now? So then I had to go and frame it. So I went to Ziegler's and got it framed, and I got into Watercolor USA, and I won a patron purchase award.
Oh wow.
And I came home and I thought, I don't know why I'm in that show. So from there it was like I just was like, okay, this is laid out for me. This is what I need to do. And so I continued painting, and it really wasn't done with the idea of going where I am today. That just evolved, and doors opened. And each time I stepped through, I thought, okay, have some courage to do this. I don't have a degree in art, and I really wanted to go back and get a degree in art. And about the time I was ready to do that, we had anywhere between one and four kids in college at all times. So I was just like, I can't do this. This is... My kids need the education right now. I don't, but really I have done well without it. I think I did my 10,000 hours on my own. I took workshops. I taught, you know, took every place I could take a class. I did life drawing up at TU, did a lot of classes at Philbrook, did workshops everywhere I could go. There was a place here called at that time, Oklahoma Art Workshops, which was a wonderful group. And they brought in instructors, and they would teach week-long workshops. So I could take the workshop and then be home at night with my family. And that's how I did that. And I had a little corner in the kitchen for a while I used as a studio. And then when the kids went off, I got a bedroom that I got to use. And then when we built our new home, we built this beautiful studio that I have now. So that's kind of how I got started. I got started because of an eye disease, which now due to modern medicine and surgery, and I see better than I did when I was a kid.
Oh, I mean, wow. Yeah.
It's amazing. Yeah. So very, very amazing.
And then as far as, you know, just looking at your evolution as a human being, you know, I know that, you know, I appreciate you sharing just some in terms of how, you know, as an artist, you know, that you have evolved and giving us an idea of how your work has evolved. I would also ask, in not to put you on the spot, but in any way, can you see in terms of any way, just as a human being, that you have evolved or maybe changed in some way just as a result of doing this work over the years?
Yes, because you have to experience the world in a different way. And you have to learn to be honest with yourself. I started off, I did very realistic work. You'd be surprised. I mean, it was pretty decent, but it bored me to death. I did not find it to be a challenge. I found it unfulfilling. And that's when I realized I'm more into the relationships and the interconnections of what we have in the world more than what that actual world looks like. So I like to do the emotions that are within us more than I do the scene that is before us. To me, that scene is before me, I can see it, but I want to go inside that scene. You know, what does that scene mean to me? So I learned that I was a different kind of thinker. I do a lot of writing when I'm painting. Journaling, what do I want to do with this painting? It could be everything from, I just want this to be a beautiful painting, to I want this painting to make everybody feel like they have just woke up to the best morning in the world. You know what I mean? So that's kind of where my thoughts go. I want to leave this world a better place. And that's kind of where I'm at. And I don't know of any other way to do it other than to share what I've learned with other artists, which I do, and help other artists, which I do. And just do some work that makes people feel happy and fulfilled. And that's kind of where I'm at right now.
Oh yeah, that's beautiful. And I was gonna ask too, do you ever find yourself going back and, let's say for instance, maybe revisiting something that you wrote, let's say about a work you did, you know, 2, 3, 4 years ago or longer? Hey, I'm just curious maybe what that feels like in terms of if you go back and read what you've written or just kind of revisit where you were, you know, at that time in terms of just internally.
Yes, because, you know, during the, you know, a lot happens in your life. I read a lot. I revisited about, 6 months ago. I read through the time period when my parents were dying, because I went through about 10 years where I was back and forth taking care of my mom and dad, and both are deceased now. And the emotions I felt doing that, and how the painting helped me keep a straight mind about what needed to be. Way we really want them to be. Yes, our parents do get sick. Yes, they do die. And that's just part of living. And I really got very peaceful about the prospect of death, which kind of I thought was interesting. I don't have that, you know, it's not like I'm looking forward to it, but I don't have that intense fear that I see some people have. And I think it's because I was able to process that through the words, through the music, through the painting. I was able to grieve that and come out on the other side with a very different perspective of what we are in this world, and to be more accepting of where I am right now with aging and, you know, grandchildren and all of those things that we, wonderful things that we get to experience, and how lucky I have been in this world. I mean, it's amazing what I have been allowed to do. It's, a tremendous blessing. And I feel every day I have to thank God for what I have been allowed to do. And not many people can really get up and say, wow, I have really had an amazing life. I have had an amazing life. I had a really tough childhood, but I have had an amazing life.
I love that. And you know, what's so interesting too, is even as I was listening to you talking, and when you were talking about how, you know, there's so much more to this than, or at least I don't know if I'm rephrasing this or paraphrasing this, but what I was getting the sense of was that there's so much, you know, so much more to that work that I'm looking at. And I mean, the work is very beautiful and it really speaks to me, but it's so neat to hear you talking about how there's so much more to it than that. In other words, you know, where you were psychologically at that time, spiritually, and as you said, speaking about, you know, any music that may have been going through you at that time, and anything that you wrote or reflected about, it is very interesting that it's, you know, that there's so much, there's almost like there's different dimensions of the work than just the work itself, which I find very interesting.
And, you know, and I may look at a piece now and have a totally different feeling for it because I'm at a different place in my life. But when I'm painting, I am so absorbed in the painting that sometimes when I'm done, it almost feels like, how did that happen? You know, I have people all the time ask me, how do you get that color red? How do you do? Honestly, I don't know how to tell them, because once you get in there, it's like there's a different force inside of you. And I paint with both hands too. So it's just kind of a different feeling. And I think most artists could describe that feeling. It's euphoric. It's great. So I don't even know how to even explain. I think realistic work's a little bit different. You can go step by step and say, I did this and I did this and I did this. It's all hard. It's all just a different way of looking at it. And with music is interesting. I went to an exhibit, you know, I think it was in Boston. It was about Matisse. And there I found out that his favorite song was a song by Schumann, Arabesque in C major. And I thought, isn't that interesting? Because you never think of Matisse in music. Hmm. And so then I thought, I have to listen to that song. So then I listened to the song, and then I got the sheet music and I learned to play the song. It's not one of my favorite songs, but I could see why Matisse liked it. It's very repetitive, and he described it as sounding like lace. And lace has a lot of intricacy in it, but repetitive intricacy. And I thought, that's exactly how that song is. So it made me understand why he liked that song. So it's, you know, music is, I think music and writing and painting, you know, anything, all those creative aspects of our world all do come in to kind of interconnect in a way, if we will allow it to happen. You know, I think most people who paint also have a musical side. You know, I tend to think that. I might be wrong. I've had a lot of painters say, oh, there's no way I could sing a note. Well, I'm maybe not sing a note, but you might be able to beat a drum, you know.
Oh, yeah. And I'm thinking, too, is it almost as if, you know, and I realize you obviously as an artist have to be able to, or at least it would help, I believe, to be able to visually see the work. But I'm almost wondering in some ways is what I'm looking at, for instance, in that particular work. Am I also basically, am I seeing sound? I don't know if that's right. I don't know if that makes sense the way I'm asking that question, but if there's actually, yes, it's more to it than just what you were seeing at the time.
Yes, I think the music is definitely throughout. Like if you even look on the side, which I didn't intend to, but there's the keyboard.
And oh, yeah, yeah.
And then you have the lines going through, which is the melody and the rhythm. And I don't realize it when I'm doing it. And I didn't even realize it until another artist mentioned to me, you know, you're painting music. And I thought, really? Oh yeah, she's right. And I just remembered who told me to go to try Watercolor USA, Nancy Godsey.
Huh.
Nancy. Yeah, she's the one who told me you need to enter shows. And I'm like, wow, okay. I was very young, but.
Oh yeah.
But she gave me the prospectus, and anyway, she kind of guided me into that.
So. And I think it's also wonderful that, you know, that you remember these people at these specific points in your journey that, you know, kind of pointed the way, or at least gave you some idea of, you know, where to go next on the journey. So I think that's fantastic that you remember those people.
You know, there are a lot of people like Nancy Swindler who did Oklahoma Art Workshop. She guided me tremendously. I didn't even realize it at the time. You know, oftentimes they're doing it subtly and you don't realize it till after. I was like, oh, wow, that lady, she put me onto something. Judy Richardson Gard is the one who told me, you know, stop studying Bridgman's, you know, when I was doing life drawing. She said, just draw how you draw. That's what's charming. I mean, I'll never forget her telling me that. She says, you're ruining your drawing by getting too specific. You know, but those are things that I think you have to remember in life. The people who have helped you. I've been really lucky with that. And when I moved to Tulsa, you know, I had moved, oh my gosh. Oh, I was in 10 different schools around the country that we moved almost every year. Once in a while, we made it 2 years somewhere, but typically every year. And when I got to Tulsa, this was such a beautiful community. And I told my husband, let's just stay here. I like it here. And we did. And we were very lucky that we could stay here. But the people here were wonderful. They embraced me. They didn't care that I was this nomad girl who had moved everywhere in the world. And I feel like they really gave me a chance. And I will never, ever forget that, because these were people who guided me along and accepted me and helped me find what I really needed to do and be. Because when you're an artist, it is not just doing, it is your being. That's, you know, all of us inside of us have that creative something or other. That's who we really are. We search for that forever. And when you find that, what a gift.
Oh yeah. And I was going to say, just to feel, you know, that you're really connected to the community and yeah. I would have to think too, that makes a lot of difference as well, just in terms of, you know, feeling inspired and feeling like, you know, being part of a community, and that I would assume that really, you know, feeds, you know, the creativity and feeling, you know, at home, metaphorically speaking, as well as literally.
Well, look what Tulsa has for the arts. I mean, it's a marvelous city, and I've lived a lot of places, so I can tell you, Tulsa is one of the loveliest cities I've ever been in, you know, and that is the absolute truth. And so I have a deep love for Tulsa. They were in Oklahoma. I mean, it's been a good state for me. So I have no complaints.
I like it. I like that. And then I was going to ask a little bit, just kind of talking current day, just as an artist going through, and I know the past 3 or 4 months, you know, I know there's some similarities with how, you know, people have, and I realize everyone has a different story, but I know that, I've sensed that everyone has a little bit of a different experience, even though there maybe are some commonalities. But maybe just asking a little bit about what this time has been like for you, both as an artist and as a human being, going through this.
Well, I have to say, I haven't created as much as I thought I would, because I'm taking time finally to do some other things. I've had time to add other things in that I enjoy. So I've been reading more, and of course my husband's home, so we've been spending more time together. And it's been a time of slowdown where I had to really take a look at what do I want now at this stage of my life? You know, the art is there and it will always be there, but what else do I want? And these relationships, you know, my husband and I have been married almost 39 years. That's a long time.
Oh yeah.
And we're not young people anymore. So what do I want to have for both of us in our coming years, and how will we come together in a more meaningful way while we still can? So these are things I'm looking at: who is important to me, what is important to me, and kind of sorting through. And I wouldn't think that I'd be doing that now. I thought that I would be just engrossed in the painting totally 100%, and that hasn't been the case. Not that I'm not, because I'm certainly I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I've got 7 paintings in here that I did. I mean, it's just like I'm looking around, like, and one that I'm working on now. So it's not, so I maybe I'm painting just as much, but I have more time to do other things. So it's been kind of interesting. And I do miss seeing people a lot. But I'm also enough of a loner that I can be okay by myself. So we've been making up by doing Zoom meetings with some of my art friends, and, you know, and I'm on the board of Oklahoma Visual Arts Coalition, so I have Zoom meetings with them, and I have Zoom meetings with my sisters. So, you know, I'm doing those things in order to keep connected. I think the lack of connection is going to be really difficult for people. But the thing that's going to be interesting is when it all opens up again and we are free to go out, I'll be curious to see how many of us really want to be as active as we used to be. Because there's a part of me that enjoys this slowed down time, because I'm not as filled with anxiety, and I'm actually taking time to really think, okay, I can do that tomorrow. Let me think about it. You know, taking more time instead of just going in there, charging in and getting something done. And I didn't do a lot of drawer cleaning and stuff like that, like everybody who's been talking about. Nah. I'm like, nah, I'll do that some other time. I'll do that on a cold day. But
there'll be time for that later, right? Yeah. And hey, it's weird. I heard someone the other day refer to this as kind of a sacred pause in some ways, even though I realize, you know, it doesn't sound like necessarily that you have completely paused everything, but does it feel a little bit like that in some ways? Maybe just kind of reconnect, you know, in terms of maybe, you know, more deeply diving into your humanness as well, as far as you said, as far as your loved ones.
yes.
family and friends and those connections.
Yes, yes. And I'm trying to really connect in a more deeper, intense, long-lasting way, not just these short little hi-bye type of things. Hi, I thought I'd check on you. Okay, goodbye. You know, in a different way. And during this time, another thing that's interesting is I'm expecting, my daughter is expecting a baby. So
we're
going to have a grandson October 11th or before. But, you know, that's interesting to think of a COVID baby. I mean, and so that's going to be a new experience too. It'll be our sixth grandchild. So it's, that's a joyous thing. She's frightened because of COVID and it's, luckily, she has a marvelous boss, so she's able to do a lot of work from home. But that's something to think about, too. This child coming into this world that we feel is such a flawed world, but really, is it such a flawed world? You know, life goes on.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And this, too, will pass. So this is really nothing new. And I always tell them, when I talk to younger people, it's interesting because a lot of them have never really encountered a lot of sickness. Well, when you and I were young, I mean, measles, mumps, chicken pox, I mean,
that's right. Yeah.
Flu every year. I mean, half the class was out for at least a month. I mean, that was not an unusual situation. People were sick far more often. We've just been spoiled with all of the wonderful medicine that we have now and the antibiotics available and the vaccinations available. So I feel like maybe this is a time for us to regroup and think about our health in a different way too. You know, appreciate ourselves a little bit more. Reminds me a little bit of when I was a kid and I used to go, my grandparents had farms. I'm originally from Minnesota. And I used to go and spend a lot of time with my grandmother on the farm in the summer. And the farm was about very simple living. And that's what this kind of feels like. You know, you didn't really get real dressed up in the morning because you're going to go out and climb that apple tree. And you're going to sneak off into the woods, even though your grandfather told you you shouldn't, and he knew you were going anyway. I mean, it was just all this stuff. And if you're lucky, he might give you a little ride on the tractor. And of course, my sister and I, we'd always have to kind of go tiptoe around and peek in the old outhouse because that was like fascinating completely. You know, it just look at the pig and tease them and you know, do all that stuff that kids do on a farm. And a greater contact with life in a different way. Not technologically, but real life.
Yes, I was going to say that's so refreshing because it really does. I do get that sense that it's almost like in some ways, and I've heard several people say this, that it's almost gotten so normal to be so incredibly busy and, you know, to the point of not being able to really pause and enjoy these things, that it does really feel like this is an opportunity for, I guess, what you call a reset in some ways.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because we tend to stay busy and we tend to stay in crowds. Neither one of those are really particularly healthy.
And I was going to say, as far as being with crowds and all the hustle and bustle, sometimes it is a little hard to get, you know, back in touch with ourselves again, you know, as far as, you know, as you're talking about journaling and just taking time to really ponder and really contemplate things. And it really does say it's inspiring to hear that you're seeing this as an opportunity and really looking at this in a balanced way.
Well, we have to, and that doesn't mean I don't have some days where it feels a little blue, but I'm always like, you know what? I have nothing to complain about. You know, I've got my studio, I've got my house, I've got enough to eat. I can go to Walmart, pick up my groceries. I mean, you know, there's really, I think our world is a magnificent world and aren't we lucky to be in it? Let's enjoy it. And just let all of these problems that are out there stay out there. We don't need to internalize those problems. Those problems will go away. You will never get rid of problems.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And then as we're coming to a conclusion, this is, it's kind of interesting. I had never actually thought about even doing this before. And I would, you know, it's something I certainly wish I would have thought about this sooner. But, you know, due to the fact that this is, you know, that I met you at Living Arts and that this is, you know, ultimately for their podcast. Not to put you on the spot at all, but I wanted to see if there is, in fact, you know, just anything, any reflections that you might have about what Living Arts, you know, has meant to you over the years or what it means to you, you know, if that has changed at all, just maybe just anything that you might share, you know, just in terms of what, you know, what of what that, you know, what that organization means to you.
Living Arts has always meant new opportunity to me because the mindset in Living Arts was always something different. nothing that was ordinary. And it gave young artists a chance to show unusual work and work that probably would never be accepted anywhere else. You did not have to be acceptable to be accepted into living arts. You know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think that's always been kind of an interesting twist. And so that's why it makes it such a fresh and wonderful organization that this city needs to have. Because I really have great visions for it, for me personally. I could see where it could become a very significant art center regionally, maybe even nationally, because there aren't many art centers that really look at the artwork in the creator the way that Living Arts does. You know, there's typically not a theme, you know, just get out there and come up with something new and something that may be interesting and it may be insulting. You may not like it. It may be ugly, but it's still your creation.
Yeah.
And, show it. And I love that. I think it's
great. Oh, yeah. And it's I appreciate you sharing that. It's and it's been fantastic being able to visit with you and hear about your perspective and about your journey. And I just I thank you so much for taking this time. It's been great to continue the conversation. And I feel like I've learned a lot about you, and I'm really appreciative of that. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I've enjoyed it. It's been good to see you too.
Absolutely. Thanks again.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Oh, see. Well.